CliffCentral.com.
Good morning, everybody. We're live. It is CliffCentral.com on a Monday morning. A normal 5-day week this week, but don't forget next week we've got that annoying public holiday in the middle of the week scenario. I think it's on a Tuesday, and for many people that screws with their balance. So, you know, you might be one of those people who gets to take some time off. You get to take off Monday, and then you have an extra long weekend, which is not a bad idea. I'm saying just, you know, if you can do it, do it. Get what you can. All right, we're here and live on a Monday, and Leanne Moll's here, and C.S. Angweni's here, and you're here, and that's all that matters. So up and at 'em. Let's go. Let's get cracking. Good morning, Ass. Good morning, Sia. How's it, guys?
Good morning. Dare I comment on Leanne's hair and try to figure out what that's called?
Yes, what is it called? Because we had pigtails and ponytails, and we had a huge argument the other day. That is a bun, isn't it?
Yes, it is a bun.
I was going to say a top knot.
That's a bun. That's good.
I think that's what men wear.
Isn't a bun the same as a top knot, though, except that one is worn by a man and the other by a woman?
Oh, boy, here we go.
You see, it always becomes like an argument, doesn't it? So weird. What is wrong with us?
I don't know.
It's a top knot.
It is a top knot. No, well done. All right, so what's been happening, everybody? What's been going on? How was your weekend?
What a busy, busy news weekend.
Yeah, there was a lot going on. Jeez. Jesus, I mean, awesome, right? The kind of weekend where you should really be sitting in front of the TV doing nothing, just because you could watch a whole lot of stuff happening in real time. Amazing.
Yeah, what I often try to do over the weekends when we aren't doing the show live is not try to take in so much, since we do that Monday.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
What's happening with the news. But this weekend, I just couldn't avoid things. I was sitting in front of the news and, you know, discussing things and trying out details of when this happened and why did this happen. It was so much going on.
Well, I mean, on that note, maybe we should just start off with something that's an ongoing story. And I don't know if you saw this over the weekend, but UCT is pretty much burning down, which is awful. And I mean, there's some pictures that are coming through which are just so disappointing and depressing. I mean, that's the upper campus at UCT, and just very, very sad pictures of the whole place being destroyed. You could see that's the restaurant that was at the Rhodes Memorial. And very, very sad. It's obviously, I don't think it's arson. It might have been that started the fire originally. But this is a natural fire. And, you know, that we've got all those fires around Cape Town. And, you know, the worst part of this is that all the thots in Cape Town couldn't take their selfies because the smoke was a bad filter for them. And you can't show your ass so well in selfies. But here's the UCT library. And the reason I'm showing you that picture is, I mean, that fire is really just destroying everything in that building. What's so scary about the UCT library burning down like that is that it's got in its archives some 100 and 200-year-old books and collections and documents. I mean, I think the first ever Khoisa dictionary has probably gone up in flames as well. We've lost a lot of very precious things in that fire, and I think it's just so devastating and sad to see this stuff. You know how much I hate it when I see precious things and things that can't be you can't buy new versions of this. You know, you can't just go and replace them. You can't go to the shops and buy a new one. It's not going to be the same. Yeah. It's a very sad state of affairs, and I it just breaks my heart to see this stuff. So if you're one of those people who went to UCT, then you probably feel it more than any of us. But apparently they had to evacuate people, they had to evacuate students, they had to evacuate houses in the area. And here's a video of this explosion at the restaurant at the Rhodes Memorial, which you can see. Just look at this. Unbelievable. You can see the restaurant burning there in the background, and then suddenly there's this fireball as the Rhodes Memorial restaurant catches fire. It's just a very, very ugly situation. And
yikes.
Yeah. And then there was a fire, as if that isn't bad enough. There was also a fire at Charlotte Maxeke Hospital over the weekend because...
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I mean, there were... So I didn't know what was going on. And then on Saturday, I saw videos from a friend of mine who's in emergency services, and he was like, we're evacuating the whole of Charlotte Matleka, and I was like, what the hell? How's that happening?
Crazy.
You know? Yeah, so I just,
and then,
look at this quickly. I'll give you an idea. There might be some audio with this as well, but you can see nurses and doctors like wheeling patients out, and you know, a whole sort of wing of the place caught fire. It was quite devastating. So whoever's been playing with matches this weekend, please stop. It's really not doing anyone any good. You
know. I'm beyond annoyed to find out with the Charlotte Matleka Hospital situation that partly the fact that it grew so much was because there was no working fire hydrants. This is according to a report by Times Live.
I heard that what had happened
is true.
Yeah, I mean, apparently the fire engines pulled up, and you know they need to connect to those fire hydrants, the water mains, basically, so that they can use that water to put out the fire, because you need huge amounts of water. You can't just connect to a normal hose pipe, you know. You have to have those big fire hydrants, those ones that we see on the sides of streets in most cities. Well, apparently, because this is South Africa, thieves had stolen the fittings off of these fire hydrants. So you couldn't connect the pipes from the fire engine to the fire hydrants. That is the kind of thing that I'm sorry, you know, when we talk about how South Africa is a great place to live and all the rest of it, it really is. It's all of those things. But it just drives me crazy that we live in a country where that kind of thing really makes us seem like a banana republic. That kind of thing is just because it's not policed at all, and cable theft and you know, infrastructure that's just stolen all the time, and copper cables and all of that sort of thing. And now this, just proving that, you know, for people who are thieves and criminals, and don't give me that whole thing of, oh, they're poor and they need to make a living. You cannot excuse theft just because people are hungry, just because people are desperate. There are things that they can do that are not illegal, and it bothers me that when a moment of emergency arises like this, you suddenly come to terms with how badly we manage our infrastructure, how badly we manage society, and it drives me mad, because you know, more people could have lost their lives. We could have saved more of the building. We could have put the fire out in time. Instead, we're now dealing with massive, massive destruction and possibly loss of life.
Yeah.
Leanne, we can't hear you.
I've looked into it before. It was muted because of the Hardy dogs.
Oh, okay.
But so I can't remember the exact figures now.
Mm.
But I was looking at countries that have a higher unemployment rate than us.
Yeah.
And higher levels of poverty, yet lower levels of crime.
Yes.
And that, for me, points to a people problem and not a poverty problem.
Absolutely. Now, how do you face that down? Because some people think that even to bring that up is to somehow acknowledge something that's uncomfortable, or to say that there's something worse about South Africa than about anywhere else. And that may or may not be true. I'm actually not terribly interested in the answer to that. What I'm interested in is what we can do to fix it. And, you know, at this point, I'm just like, that kind of thing is just, it makes me crazy, because, you know, UCT burning, there's stuff there that we can't replace. Those buildings are historic. If you watched any of, you know, Prince Philip's funeral over the weekend, you'll see how history, tradition, and keeping up for hundreds, and in the case of Windsor Castle, almost 1,000 years of historic buildings and artifacts and traditions, it adds value to your society in ways that you can't just replace, in ways that you can't just, you know, put something back where it was. If it's gone, it's gone. And I'm very concerned that they didn't digitize that library. I'm very concerned that in the hospital they didn't have a plan for dealing with this. I mean, it just seems to me, you know, these are very, very sad stories and make me very, very uncomfortable. It's the kind of thing that I lose a lot of hope. And I don't want to start this Monday morning making people feel bad, but I do think we've got to acknowledge these are very South African problems.
I was moved, though, yesterday, and their intentions, I'll assume, are good, and maybe there might just be some PR, but in this case, I also think they deservingly should get that PR. How a lot of corporates have banded together in and around Cape Town in the past few hours just to assist people there.
Yes.
you know, like the ride hailing apps, if you used a certain promo code, they, you know, you would get free trips to be moved away from the fire.
Yes.
Some restaurants were offering students free meals, presumably those who are staying at res and hadn't had dinner. So all you had to do is just show your student card and you'd get a free dinner.
Right.
You know, things like that. I'm like, okay, this is good. You know, people helping out where they can and banding together. I thought that was really, really sweet.
That is good, and I agree with you, Sia. Like, you see the best and the worst of humanity in a situation like that. Anyway, I mean, those are the big South African stories. There's lots of other stuff we've got to talk about, and we'll get into that. But I also went to a wedding over the weekend, which was really nice.
Halala.
Yeah, and it was such a happy thing to be at, because you'll remember that just before lockdown started, I went to a wedding the weekend just before the president locked the country down. And I feel like we should be coming out of level one sometime soon, because it's really unnecessary for us to have any more restrictions on people. It's not doing a damn thing. I told you I went to a bar, sort of a restaurant bar, about 2 weeks ago, and it was jam-packed. I mean, if you're the kind of person who's nervous about COVID, you would have lost your mind. Everywhere I stood in that place felt like it was a passage. And this wedding over the weekend, I think there were about 100 people. And I didn't worry about anything. I don't even think I had a mask with me at any time. And there were people who had masks on them, but we didn't wear them. And, you know, we all sat at tables like we would have before at a wedding, and in the congregation during the ceremony, which was very special. Everybody seemed to be having a very good time, so it felt like normal. It felt like, you know, the pre-COVID times, which was awesome. So I loved that. And I really think, like, we've got to get back to normal now. The numbers are dropping like you can't believe. And it's really, we've made it through. We can start to feel good about that. We can congratulate ourselves. We can obviously take stock of all the things that we didn't do right. And I do think we need now to get our lives back together, get our lives back up and running, because getting back to the office and doing normal things is probably on everyone's agenda, even if you've got used to certain things, and that's fine. If certain things have changed for the better, then keep it that way. But otherwise, we need to move on.
Gareth,
did the wedding feel different?
Sorry,
Sia. Did the wedding feel different compared to other weddings you've been to, purely because people were together again and in a public space and interacting and socializing and even hugging? And
yeah, I mean, that's why I'm saying it felt like, you know, pre-COVID weddings. And it also felt like we were all celebrating the good stuff, you know, human beings who are in love with each other and getting married, and, you know, none of that kind of muted celebration that we've seen over the last while. Remember that last wedding I went to was a dry wedding, because the president had banned alcohol consumption at wedding venues and so on. So it felt very, very different to that one. I mean, they were both magic in their own ways, but at this one you could actually celebrate. You know, you could actually have a party. And South Africans don't know how to do that without drinking. So we kind of had to do that. And it was great. But I did I Ubered all the way there and back. And that was, I mean, it's quite far. So it was like a 500 Rand trip one way and a 500 Rand trip the other way. But it was worth it. Yeah.
What if this is you with some sort of superpowers? What if you have been what we are waiting for these times? You went to a wedding just before we went into lockdown. What if you going to a wedding now is us going back to normal? What if you were the key?
It was me, yeah. I'd love to believe I had superpowers, but I don't think I do. Speaking of superpowers, though, apparently some dude accidentally took one Moderna and one Pfizer vaccine. He obviously, you know, had the injection for one and then forgot which one that was. So he got the Moderna and the Pfizer instead of two of the same. And people are wondering, like, you know, is this going to be bad for him, or is it going to maybe develop superpowers in him? You never know. You never know. The guy could end up. Yeah, he could end up being very, very powerful, right?
Like the Incredible Hulk.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
As soon as I heard about this mix-up, though, I thought, oh, wait a minute. I love South Africa, but this feels like something that could happen here with the mix-up of admin and whatnot. But his name is Craig Richards,
yeah.
And he's from New Hampshire in the U.S. So his first dose was the Moderna one, and then the second one was meant to be the Pfizer one, but really it was all an admin mix-up. And he only noticed, you know, they have those vaccine cards afterwards.
Right.
And he noticed afterwards, he goes, "Oh, wait a minute.
I got the wrong one.
Something's a little wrong here." Yeah.
Well, if he grows a penis out of his forehead, or his feet grow wings like the god Hermes, then we know we've got something going on, right?
Yeah, let's see. The New Hampshire's Department of Health and Human Services so far has declined to comment further on what his situation will be due to the lack of data regarding mixing vaccines. But what if this is it? What if he takes, how many variations are there of these vaccines? Like 4 or 5? What if he takes all of them? I'm worried. Oh, yeah. I'm worried for his sake now.
Well, there are.
Can you imagine the panic? I would have shut down, or I would have gone wild and had parties and said goodbye to everyone.
But, you know, I mean, it's likely nothing will happen. It's likely that that this person will be absolutely fine. But, you know, this is just this shows you that, again, none of this is really territory that we've ever been down before. And while vaccines are nothing new, this happens to people. You know, sometimes people get medication for something. I mean, you can even hear it just in terms of something we spoke to Nina Hasty about last week, and that's like mental health medication. And some people react very, very badly to something, and they have side effects that nobody else does because we're all different, right? And and you never know. Like every single time anything happens to you, you need to take you need to take cognizance of the fact that everyone is different, and we all have different genes, and we all have different ingredients in our cells, and you never really know what's going to happen.
This Craig dude is very, you know, sound and sounds responsible and reasonable.
Yeah.
Because if this, for example, happened to me, I'd be screaming and shouting from the rooftops with anxiety. But he actually said,
yeah, "You and Leanne would not. You and Leanne are not good in a crisis. In fact, I know you two. If we were in the zombie apocalypse, I really would. I love you both, but there's no way I'd have either of you on my team. It would be a complete disaster.
And I wouldn't take it personally. I get it.
Oh.
He just said he feels physically fine.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, there's so much conflicting information right now, but he's just taking that in small doses.
Right.
You know, he says with everything going on with the Johnson & Johnson vaccine being pulled in some cases, for example, he was feeling a little uneasy about the whole thing. But right now, he's just fine. And, you know, thinking about it, if it was someone else, they could have also seen a money-making opportunity here by, you know,
listen,
taking the health board to court and trying to make money off that. You know,
are you kidding? If he does develop superpowers, I'm going to go and get exactly the same mixture he got. So one, hello, could I please have one Moderna and one Pfizer? I also want to be able to fly.
I'd like the Craig Richards special, please.
Exactly. They should market it. If that works, I mean, imagine if they discovered something like that entirely by mistake. So they're giving you a vaccine for COVID, but it ends up like curing some other problem that humans have had for thousands of years, and it was completely by chance, just a fluke. That would be amazing.
Let's take those notes.
Rickus says, "Gareth, imagine going back to the studio and you have to be in traffic at 5 a.m. on a winter's morning." Well, funny you should mention that, Rickus, because I went to I saw my sister yesterday, and I actually left my laptop there, and I had to wake up this morning at 5, which I would normally have done going into the studio, and drive to her quick. Luckily, she's not so far away, but I had to drive to her and grab my laptop. Otherwise, we wouldn't be able to do the show this morning. So that was sort of, it's interesting you bring that up, and we're talking about going back to normal. But it sort of felt a bit weird being up at 5. And I often think when we do the show, we're up so early and it's just us. The roads are busy, man. There's cyclists. There are people driving to work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, shops are being opened up. You can see there's a lot of activity at 5 a.m. So that's already happening, whether you like it or not.
That's good to hear that people are out and about. But I can already tell that now we are, I know to talk about the weather, rolls eyes, but I can already tell that my morning schedule now has to change slightly. You wake up and you already go,
Yeah, that's already that ends.
So
I had to get the heater on this morning, actually, for the first time.
I've heard there are some people who are already in electric blanket territory and heater territory. So, Sia, if you're in that group, I feel sorry for you. I think that's outrageous. Outrageous!
No, I think
I've been denying the cold, actually.
Oh, yeah?
Especially because we're more indoors lately. I kind of pretended that it's not coming yet. But this morning I woke up with a bit of a shock, I must admit.
Yeah.
You're definitely in denial.
I need to seek out my winter remedies. Yeah.
The comment from Pihleng is, and maybe you can help us here, Leanne, you're apparently a resident sleep expert. Can you please give us tips on how to wake up early or on time during the winter months? I don't want to slag behind. That's from Pihleng. Can you help us? I think Leanne.
Yeah, well.
Oh, there you are.
Sorry. Has she gone to sleep?
She's frozen on my side.
Okay. No, we're good now. We're good. Go ahead. No, Ash is definitely gone. I'm going to remove her and she can come back later. So, Mpihleng, obviously no answer from Leanne there for you. I'm sorry about that. Terrible. So,
it's ironic she went back to sleep.
Yeah. KP says, electric blankets went on the bed yesterday. It was toasty last night. Good for you. I can't do that. My rule is 1st of May is the absolute earliest you're allowed to do any of that. The earliest ever.
So then you're going to suffer before that?
Of course. I would rather be... Listen, you can use blankets. It's not suffering. It's, what do you think people did before electric blankets and they survived? Come on, Sia, really. You know, don't be so weak. Don't be so weak and feeble. No. It's absolutely true. All right, so there's Leanne. Hello, Ass.
Yeah.
Okay, so we...
He
wanted some advice. Go ahead.
There's so many bits and bobs out there and sleeping tips and go to bed early. But for me, it's always difficult to wake up that early, especially in winter. So you actually have to motivate yourself with other things, like I will lose my job.
Oh,
so you
if I don't get up, I'll lose my job.
Basically,
if I don't get up, I'll not be able to pay my bills. I will be hungry.
Right, go for the hard stuff from Leanne Moll. She's giving you like the reasons that you absolutely cannot argue with yourself at that time in the morning. Like, I will go hungry and lose my job. All right, very nice. So negative motivation. Yeah.
And then what you do is you cry in the shower and then you release all of that and then go about your day.
Oh, my God. All right.
I thought you were going to perhaps recommend a YouTube channel that plays harps all the time. So that's how you can wake up.
Yeah, exactly. Kids. I thought there'd be something positive in there. But look at her. She goes straight to it. Okay. I want to just quickly, before we go to the news, bring this up because I think it's so stupid. So Emma Watson was in the news this weekend. That's the girl from Harry Potter. And she said in an interview over the weekend, she's not single. She is, and listen to this term, self-partnered. Self-partnered. That's what she's calling being single. Self-partnered. It's like a fancy way of saying no one will have me or I think I'm too good for everyone else. That's basically what she's calling it, self-partnered. So do we take this seriously or do we think this is just a typical Hollywood thing where she said something, maybe she was even joking in an interview and people got upset with her or they quoted her and now suddenly they've got a story. I mean, is this a nothing?
Well, it sounds like Gwyneth Paltrow and Chris Martin with conscious uncoupling.
Yes,
remember
correct.
That when yeah, they were getting a divorce?
Right. New terminology that's just nonsense, right?
That just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Leanne Moll says she's having huge trouble with her Wi-Fi, so we're just going to get her back on. And while she's getting back on, we do have lots of news. I'm going to get to the headlines, and we can start with those. And then Sia and I want to talk a little bit about Prince Philip's funeral, which was another big story from the weekend. And we've got a bunch of other things on the agenda this morning. Also, we're starting something brand new this morning. It is it's called... well, it's about collections. I mean, it doesn't matter what it's called. It's about collections. Everybody, and you know that
collectomania.
It's like Africa analysis, collectomania. We've got names for everything. Anyway, the point of this thing is that we're going to discuss all the collections that people have. Some people collect stamps. Some people collect coins. Some people collect books. Some people collect 200 different things. And everybody's got one, basically. And we're going to be talking about these over the course of the next couple of weeks. And the reason we decided to do this is because we've been talking to the guys from the South African Gold Coin Exchange. And I've bought some stuff from them before. Because if there's anything to collect, it's precious metals, right? And we all know, because we've spoken over the years to the guys at Troy Gold and in a number of different places, even Anthea all those years ago, we used to talk about whether or not you should have some precious metals and some gold in your portfolio. And people are taking all of that very seriously because we're in such strange times and you need to know what you can rely on and what's valuable. And you might be collecting something that's very valuable. So we'll talk about that in the course of this morning's discussions. But the developing story this morning in Cape Town, apparently strong winds have fanned that Cape Town fire, and there are more evacuations on the way. The city's disaster risk management spokesperson, Charlotte Powell, has said residents in two streets in Vredehoek have been evacuated as a precautionary measure. So the first big headline for the morning is that people in Cape Town are being told in certain places, especially back up against the mountain, towards that spur on which the Rhodes Memorial lives and Hospital Bend, that area, and going down into the city bowl, people are being told to keep an eye and to evacuate if necessary. But, of course, emergency services are on the scene trying to contain and deal with that fire as we speak. So horrible, horrible scenes unfolding in Cape Town, and I hope that you are safe.
That's such a traumatic thing. Now, yes, these are just headlines and we get into stories. Sometimes we gloss over it. I've never had to evacuate my home ever. What do you do when you hear that?
Well,
are there alarms in the community? Do you just keep up to date with social media? What do you take? Do you take an overnight bag?
You don't usually have time to get a whole lot of stuff, so you can really only pack what's absolutely essential. And, we often talk on the show just in general terms about like what you would save if your house was burning down. But I think it's just a panic and you just get out with whatever you absolutely need at that moment, money, passports, that kind of stuff, and you just go. But emergency services are pretty good in Cape Town when it comes to this. And I know that there are helicopters that are dumping water on the fire as we speak. They have been.
The thing is, it starts. So when I was living in Cork Bay, there was I lived on the side of the mountain, and we were the first house that would have been hit by the fire had it got to us.
Sure.
But it was so close that you could no longer see much in the house or where you were because of the smoke. You were breathing in ashes.
Oof.
And everything was covered in ashes. I was actually in Johannesburg at the time for work, and I was following the fire during the night, and I had all my pets at the house. And I had these, when you're not there, it's so difficult, and you're being sent pictures by the neighbors, and the pictures are mainly flame. God. And I actually got onto the first flight that I could because I was following it during the night and the anxiety was too much. And you get there and people aren't actually panicking. They're kind of just walking around, talking about it, standing in the street, watching it, trusting the firefighters, because our firefighters in Cape Town are really world class. And yes, there's talk about what will we do if we have to move out, but it doesn't happen as quickly all the time, depending on the winds. But you do get plenty of warning with all of the ash and the smoke. Sure. And
so it's not like
sort of
it's thing. Not like you'd suddenly wake up and be chased out of your house. I mean, there is a bit of a build up here, and obviously the fire can spread very quickly. But you would know, it wouldn't just happen. You wouldn't wake up this morning and go, "Oh my God, got to rush out of the house."
Well, because if that was the case, I'd just hear my mother's voice in my head, because she always says, make sure you look good and you dress well when you sleep.
Yeah.
No, the last thing you want is that you fall ill or if there's an emergency and then now you're rushing around with underwear with a big hole.
Yeah, how terrible, how embarrassing.
That's something my grandmother would say. And I was stuck in Munich in a hotel room. I was with my brother. We went with a whole lot of friends and woke up in the middle of the night after a particularly wild evening and woke up to this ear-piercing alarm and repetition of a few sentences in three languages, one after the other. Just not knowing where we were when we woke up. I remember I woke up and my brother was standing on the bed trying to find some kind of switch or speaker to turn it off. But it was a fire alarm, and it was because there was a fire in the basement of the hotel. And we were only, you know, two or three floors up. So we were all in the middle of the night, were evacuated into the street. They cordoned everything off. Two friends of ours in one of the rooms who were sharing were unaccounted for. And yes, yeah, I was standing there in my pajamas with no bra, and that's all I could think about. It's all I could think about. It was the absolute worst. Anyway, the two, just to let you know, the two that were unaccounted for slept through the entire thing. And I don't know how. But they slept through the entire thing and woke up and came down to breakfast once everything had been cleared.
It
was just another smooth evening for them.
Yeah.
Well, this is a bizarre story. The grieving widow of slain Lindani Myeni said on Sunday it was imperative that all body cam footage be released to show what transpired the night her husband was killed. The 29-year-old former KwaZulu-Natal rugby player was shot and killed in Hawaii on Wednesday. The incident happened after police responded to a burglary. A scuffle ensued and Myeni was shot. 4 days after the news of her husband's death, his widow, Lindsay, is still processing the incident. He's such a special person. I can't believe God gave him to me. I feel so blessed and I'm beyond upset about this. Adding to her grief was the uncertainty around the circumstances of her husband's death and the police's involvement in it. So this is in Hawaii, in Honolulu. They released some body cam footage, but Myeni said selective release is not good enough. She believes Lindani's race did play a part in the tragedy. So suddenly we have, you know, the police being racist and a South African involvement, a real South African involvement in this. And obviously, you know, America is just so incendiary at the moment. Everything is a race issue, and you know, the police, even in situations where you would normally say the police are completely justified to do something, now they have to prove that they are justified to do something, and they've all got body cams on. So people are asking for that body cam footage to be shown, and here we have a South African guy. I wonder what they were doing in Hawaii. Do you think they lived there? Or I mean, that's I didn't know who this this Lindani Myeni was, but apparently he and his wife, Lindsay, have been living in Hawaii for some time. So I don't know much about them, but a very sad story nonetheless, and we obviously will wait for the details to emerge from that.
What shocking thing to have to look at that footage.
Yeah. This is why police,
and when it's released,
but this is why police have to wear it these days, because if they don't wear those body cams, you know, they could be accused of all kinds of things. And we also want to know that the police are acting within the law, so it keeps them on their toes too. The state capture inquiry will be beefing up its security. This comes after the offices in the Hillside House Office Park in Parktown were burgled on Saturday night. Commission Secretary Professor Tumuleng Masala says that they have only found one computer and one monitor missing so far. He says that this doesn't really affect the work of the commission in any way. We don't want to be dramatic about this thing. It could very well have been petty criminals, he says. But this is the State Capture Commission, and everything we have here is sensitive, and we don't want to take any chances. So they're going to be beefing up security there. Ironic that this, in a week where we've got three people, obviously former President Jacob Zuma, Ace Magashule, and now Lucky Montana, who was the guy in charge just a short while ago of PRASA. These three have all said that the State Capture Commission is a witch hunt, and they have good reason to be afraid of the State Capture Commission because all of their corruption is coming to the fore, and none of them like it very much. Now, in a related story, South Africa's municipalities are not only in a financial and political mess, but also appear to be led by incompetent officials. That is thanks to information that came tonight.
What?
I know, you're horrified, right?
I can't believe that.
You'd never have thought that. But this came to light in a parliamentary reply. Of 2,747 senior municipal officials, only 1,500 met minimum competency levels. Just over half. That is what Acting Minister in the Presidency, Kumbutso Njabeni, revealed when replying to a question from the DAMP, Silias Brink. Prescribed minimum competency levels were introduced 13 years ago for municipal managers, CFOs, supply chain managers, and other people working in finance and procurement. Further in the reply, it emerged only 128 of the country's 248 chief financial officers, those are the men and women in charge of municipal finances, achieved minimum competency levels.
Oh, my word. And these are competency levels that were set 13 years ago.
Yeah.
So imagine how we were using computers and operations and systems and software in those days.
Right, which needs updating. God. So apparently 53% of all municipal senior managers met competency levels. This is only mildly promising but not acceptable, and much work needs to be done, said Nchaveni in her response. I mean, do me a favor.
Think.
Yeah, you think.
That's a bit of an understatement.
You know. It's no wonder. Yeah, so if you want to know why your municipality is a complete disaster, it's because they've put some cadre in there who has no qualifications, no competency in their area of specialization at all. And we're not talking about the figureheads. We're not talking about the mayor of a town who has to walk around and cut ribbons. We're talking about the chief financial officer of these municipalities. That is absolutely damning. What an embarrassment.
Can you imagine being one of the people who are qualified and competent, and you've worked there for years, you know the systems,
no,
and you're trying to do everything right, but you're carrying this burden of half of your business or your corporation, that's not a corporation, and half of your office place doesn't know what they're doing. You're carrying all of that.
It's outrageous.
Whoa, what a terrible job.
Absolutely outrageous.
I don't know if you guys saw this play out online over the weekend as well, the EFF and the DA going at it between each other around who had what qualification and who got this and who has a university degree and who doesn't. And I don't know when all of this is just going to end, because political party will.
It's not having a degree. The problem I have here is that if you are the CFO of a municipality, you're financially responsible for the books of that municipality. You know, we used to do this feature with the guys from the chartered accountants. What are they called? SAICA. We used to do a regular update with SAICA. You have to be okayed by them. Otherwise, you're not allowed to run the finances of a business. You're not allowed to. And a municipality even more so, because that's taxpayers' money. It's not private money. You know? Good heavens. It's unbelievable.
Oh, gosh.
So there we go. These people are not fit for the job. They must be fired. There's half the municipal managers in this country that need to take themselves out of the job before we come and get them.
Thinking about both of these stories, this particular one and also the robbery at the State Capture Commission, if it was part of a movie plot,
yeah,
wouldn't you look at that and go, that's so far-fetched.
Exactly.
Come on now. That would
you would.
So stupid.
You'd think this is ludicrous,
but
right?
Yet, yeah. Like State Capture Commission officers being burgled. You'd go, this is too ridiculous. But here we are living it.
And Tracy says they're at least competent enough to be corrupt. That's about right. I mean, ain't that the truth? Winnie says it's just connections. Come on. No data, even in the private sector. It's all just connections. It's like, yeah, you get this job because you know the person who appoints people there. That's how it works in South Africa. It's very, very upsetting. Finally, NASA NASA's Mars helicopter, the Ingenuity, could make its first flight over the red planet as soon as Monday. This is absolutely amazing. So inside of all of that equipment that they managed to land on Mars was a helicopter, which apparently can take off and fly over the surface of the planet and take video and pictures. Isn't that amazing?
Oh, crazy.
So apparently it'll mark the first ever powered controlled flight on another planet and will help NASA to reap invaluable data about the conditions on Mars. NASA is targeting no earlier than Monday, April the 19th, that's today, for the first flight of its Ingenuity Mars helicopter, the space agency reported on Saturday. Data will return to Earth a few hours following the autonomous flight, which would take off at approximately 3:30 a.m. Ingenuity's first trip was initially set for last Sunday, but was delayed after a potential issue emerged during a high-speed test of the four-pound helicopter's rotors. Isn't that incredible? That's really great. So I'm going to
say, imagine having NASA's team come and fix up our municipality for a week.
Well, that's the level of competency we need.
But the thing is, I think a lot of it would just not even touch sides with them because they're too clever.
Yeah, I mean, listen, they could probably sort. You don't need to be a genius. You don't need to be a rocket scientist, literally, to sort out South Africa's municipality. You just need someone who's honest. And someone who's empowered to make the decisions and come in and clean the place out. And all of these ANC cadres who've been deployed must be fired. I don't care if that ends up putting their families into poverty. It is not the responsibility of the state to give sheltered employment to incompetent people. That is not what we have a government for. Municipalities in this country are failing left, right, and center, falling apart. People have sewage problems, water and electricity supply problems, all kinds of problems with billing, urban planning. Some of these municipalities, these towns are falling apart. The little towns in South Africa are falling apart because they managed so badly. And the people who live there ultimately carry the can. These people must be fired and they must be put in jail if they've stolen money. In jail. Finished and klar. All right, so that's all the news that you need to know this morning. I don't know, did you watch any of Prince Philip's funeral, Leanne?
I watched bits on YouTube. Okay. I watched one particular clip where they'd made this huge headline about how the Queen had wiped a tear during the ceremony.
Well,
I think what annoyed me about watching any of it would have been the media coverage of it.
That's sickening.
Why?
Like, imagine how people feel nonsense instead of just watching this. So my parents watched it. They got like a nice big pot of tea and they sat and watched the whole thing. I was at the wedding that I told you about, so I actually didn't see it live. But when I got back home on Saturday night at about, I don't know, 11 o'clock in the evening, I decided I'd PVR'd it, so I decided I'd watch the whole thing. So I spent like an extra 2 hours, got to sleep really late on Saturday night. But it was great to watch, and I mean, what an incredible ceremony.
It feels almost horrible and slightly distasteful for me to have been so enamored with this whole ceremony so much. But I want to use this word because it's fitting, in my opinion. It was iconic.
Mm.
There was just, it was classic. It was regal. It was beautiful. It was protocol and procedure. It was outfits. It was the glamour. It was, oh,
well,
fabulous.
Snaya says,
and yes, it was very touching.
Snaya says it was the most properly executed funeral I've seen. It was just meticulous beyond belief. You know, if you consider the chaos around Madiba's funeral a couple of years ago, where, you know, people were just like, they tried to put on a show, but everything was late. This didn't happen in time, even though the military involved, half of them couldn't march properly. You remember what a mess that was compared to, and it wasn't that bad. I mean, you know, there have been worse ones. But you just think about this. It was timed to the second. Every piece of music was selected personally by Prince Philip. The various regiments and military services that were present were looking spectacular. You know when someone has polished every single part of a uniform to a point where it shines? My God, it was magnificent. I mean, to see all of that splendor And then the sadness, the personal sadness of, you know, the family that were all represented there. And I just thought it was beautifully done. And it was almost worth abandoning the idea that this was a slimmed and trimmed down version of it for COVID. Because I think with this happening in COVID, we might have seen things that we never saw before. Because there would have been so many people. You would have the crowds. They would have been focused on the crowds. In this, we could be focused purely on the ceremony and purely on this, you know, small 30-person congregation who were saying goodbye to a family member. It was very personal. It was very beautiful. I thought it was magnificent and moving in every single way.
There was a – man, just the fact that – it was so tiny as well, humanized it more for me. And I felt extra sad for the Queen. And it was the fact that maybe there weren't a lot of people around her, the fact that they all were sitting separately. I just wanted to go up there and hug her. And then I saw them, the handwritten note that she wrote for Prince Philip. I thought, oh, be still my flaming heart. Shame. There was just... I'll go back to using the word iconic again. There was just this, every so often when they'd cut to her, she was just sitting there looking down. So you didn't even see much of her eyes because of the wide brimmed hat.
And then the mask. Yeah, it was almost like she was in a hijab, you know?
It's
very sad.
Everything about that was beautiful. But there was one final moment that, and I wouldn't say I cried, but it's enough to sit there and you go a little misty eyed. Did you watch right towards the end, up until Prince Philip's coffin was taken down and underneath, as his full title and all of his titles were read out?
Yeah. You want to see the video? Here it is. So we'll play this quickly.
The most excellent order of the British Empire, Lord High Admiral of the United Kingdom, one of Her Majesty's most honourable Privy Council, Admiral of the Fleet, Field Marshal in the Army, and Marshal of the Royal Air Force, husband of Her Most Excellent Majesty, Elizabeth II, by the grace of God, of the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland, and of her other realms and territories, Queen, Head of the Commonwealth, Defender of the Faith, Sovereign of the Most Noble Order of the Garter, whom may God preserve and bless with long life, health and honour, and all worldly happiness.
Wow. That's amazing. And those bagpipes, and those bagpipes, see what's the cry. All those bagpipes warming up, it's just the most eerie sound, isn't it? I mean, I've always thought that bagpipes, they've got a horrible sound to my ear, but it's just so, it's such a spooky instrument. It really is. Anyway, that guy is called Garter King of Arms. And you'll see one day when the Queen is buried, you know, whether it's soon or whether it's a long time from now, what he actually does when the Queen is buried, he reads out all of her titles and styles as well. And then he breaks his stick of office and he throws it into the grave with her. He's the last person
to... quite dramatic.
It's very dramatic, yeah. Because, you know, all his offices and everyone in a kingdom like that, they owe their office to the sovereign. And when the sovereign dies, they have to basically get it renewed by the new one or else they lose their jobs. Of course, it's all symbolic, but Garter King of Arms is in charge of all the royal announcements and the big. He's a herald, you know, in the old way that a herald would go around announcing the news to people. And Garter King of Arms is someone Sia and I actually met. What was it? 3 years ago? You remember? There he is. There's Garter King of Arms.
There you can see his arms better. I still can't see why he's the King of Arms.
So, yeah, his name is Thomas Woodcock. He's the Garter King of Arms. And Sia and I met him.
Really? Woodcock? Really?
Yes, Woodcock. Yeah.
Leanne, keep it together.
Isn't that when Sia was falling asleep in the office?
That's exactly right. So Sia was sitting in the office with me in this ancient building, which is, I mean, it was built around the time of King Charles II, and it's called the College of Arms. And we're in Garter's study, and he's busy talking to me about...
Hot, Darren.
It was in the middle of summer in London, and it was very stuffy and humid. And the College of Arms is right on the Thames River. And we're surrounded by all of these ancient books and scrolls and texts. And Garter and York Herald, the other guy you could see in that picture, are busy talking to me, and we're recording it for the show. And in fact, you can still listen to it. I think it's on cliffcentral.com. And Sia and I was really fascinated by this guy. It was probably one of the highlights of that trip for me. And what is Sia doing? He's like falling asleep at the table. He's like nodding off. Don't you wish you'd paid attention now, Sia? Didn't I tell you that this guy was important?
I know you did. I know. But of all moments, and we did great things on that trip, you know, of all moments, could I not have dozed off in the underground in the cab while we were at lunch? That was the time.
Yeah, sorry, Sia.
Sorry. I just felt flustered all over again now. That is not good. Not good at all.
Oh dear!
I thought just the last word on the royal funeral. I thought that Princess Anne and Prince Charles really were extremely dignified and did a terrific job of kind of putting that stiff upper lip in place and just making sure that everything, you know. And I'm sure that they had a lot to do with things too. But as the eldest two children of Prince Philip and the Queen, I know lots of people say things about Prince Charles, and you know, a lot of people think he's a bit weak, and some people say he's a disastrous person because of he messed up the marriage with Diana, and he had the affair with Camilla, and you know that Charles has always been a bit sensitive and awkward. But I must tell you, I think that he's every bit the part that he needs to play. And you know, I think that he and Camilla are suddenly starting to realize, you know, their responsibilities are just around the corner. Because with Prince Philip gone, I don't know how long the Queen will last, but that means for Charles and Camilla, serious job up on the way. Some very important responsibilities are about to take place for them. And you could see on Camilla's face, there's like this sudden realization that, oh, shit, this is just... this is on the way. This is my road ahead is already planned for me, whether I like it or not.
She heard all of Prince Philip's titles and thought, I've got to do all of that before I die.
yeah, absolutely. And I have to say one other thing. Like the other person who I absolutely love is that Kate Middleton. My God, she has fitted in there like a glove. She knows exactly what to do. She looks absolutely perfect. She looks beautiful. She has such a sense of, there's something regal about the woman. And I know that everybody, including me, we used to joke that, you know, her parents are very middle-class people and, you know, mom was a flight attendant and all of that stuff. But, you know, that Kate Middleton, the Duchess of Cambridge, as they call her, that woman has, she's got all the ducks in a row. I like her a lot. William lucked out with her. You compare her to that trashy Meghan and that useless Prince Harry. I mean, that Prince Harry, what an embarrassment. Even though he pitched up and he didn't say anything or do anything terribly embarrassing this time around, I mean, what a stupid loser. He must have felt like such a loser being there, because the only attention being paid to him was negative attention, and rightly so. I mean, I know he lost his grandfather, and I'm sorry about that, but really, dude, you have screwed up badly. He must have felt like such a tool.
Kate, for me, was the best dressed at the funeral. Not that it matters, but it does to me. And she had the bow to the side, and the Queen had given her a necklace to wear for the day. Yeah. She looked absolutely gorgeous, even though I think she probably has the personality of a rice cake.
I don't think
After seeing her on Saturday, I think I could actually... I
think she knows well enough that her job is not to have a personality and to be loud and to look for attention. She's exactly the opposite, and that's precisely what you need in her position. You don't want someone who looks
for attention. She knows her limits.
Yeah, I mean, listen, she is there. She supports her husband, who's also one day going to have to take on all of these responsibilities. Slowly but surely, they're all taking on more and more of them. And a lot of it is symbolism. I mean, I know there are people who just don't care about the royal family at all and who think it's a stupid, outdated, anachronistic business that should be dispensed with. I know lots of people like that. Some of them are family and friends of mine. And we disagree vehemently. I think this stuff is massively important, and I think it makes a country better to have institutions, to have traditions, to have a respect for those traditions. It gives you gravity. And there are so many countries where everything seems politically to be working very well and it's thoroughly modern, but they just don't have any real strength, any character, any national identity that's worthy of mention. And I think that one of the things that makes Britain very special is this idea of the royal family and having a monarch. And it's, you know, 1,000 years of doing this. And that has some clout, if you ask me. This Kate Middleton, she knows that. She gets that. She knows it's not about her. She stepped into a role, and she's going to do her best to fulfill, to all of her abilities, the role of being a mother to a future king, a wife to a future king, and while the others are still around, to do her duty and cause as little fuss as possible. And I think that that's really great. And Camilla's the same. You know, everybody always has a go at Camilla, and I think it's so unfair. Like, she's not looking for attention. When did you ever see Camilla trying to grab the headlines or dressing up rather than appropriately, trying to make it a splash? She doesn't do that. She doesn't make comments to the media that are outrageous. She doesn't say and do things that cause trouble. She just quietly gets on with it. I think that's really good.
And I've, you know, not really contradicting what you're saying, but I've appreciated this week the glimpses of is humanity the right word to use? But just to see their humanness.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we discussed the first public comment that Prince Charles made after Prince Philip's passing.
Yeah.
And I don't know where he was. But it seemed like it was a smaller private property. And he stepped out from the door and stood by the fence, and that's where the press was gathered.
Yeah.
And he just gave a very quick statement on how he feels about Prince Philip passing. But my takeaway was just even hearing him refer to Prince Philip as Papa.
Yeah.
Yes, it's your father. Yeah. And to take all of this pomp and ceremony away, you are just a son who has lost a father. And I appreciated that. So yes, Leanne, I know it was a headline and then was a thing taken out and way over and above board. But just to see the Queen in the car and she dabbed her eye a little, I was like, yes, you are crying. And I did so on Friday. I was just waiting for that. And I saw that and I was good.
Yeah, I mean, it's the Queen's birthday soon, and it'll be the first one without Philip. So that's going to be probably quite hard for her. I don't know. How long do you think she's got? You know, I know it's a morbid thing to discuss, and some people think it's inappropriate. But you know how when one partner dies after you've been together for a very long time, and she's in her 90s, I wonder how long she's got to go. Snai says, I'm not sure if the royal family will even be sovereign leaders in the UK after Queen Elizabeth's death. It'll be interesting to see. Yeah, but people have predicted the fall of the monarchy so many times before, and it hasn't happened, Snai. I don't think that that's going to change. I think that they are entrenched in society in a way that you can't get rid of them. And even if the monarchy becomes less and less important constitutionally, like in countries across Europe, Denmark, you know, Spain, those monarchs are really just figureheads. They'll still have a role. At the moment, you know that there isn't a constitution in the United Kingdom. It's all just a gentleman's agreement between the sovereign, parliament, and the prime minister. And if someone breaks that gentleman's agreement, there can be a constitutional crisis of a kind. Anyway, it is 7 o'clock. We do have to get to all the other stuff. And we've got something brand new for you a little bit later, Collectomania, which I think is going to be lots of fun. We'll talk about all the things that people collect, and there are so many interesting categories of things there. So we're getting to all of that just now. CliffCentral.com. It is a Monday. It's the 19th of April, 7 o'clock. CliffCentral.com.